A lot of the bears are starting to move to the high country right now. On the other hand, the deer are starting to get pushed down from some of the rough weather that's going on at the higher elevations. That typically pushes them down to lower elevations this time of year.
The hares are all white now too.
Yep.
Do the foxes here change color or no?
No. But the hares are. I've still seen a few with a little bit of brown on them, but they are starting to turn their white color.
Right. So, and then when the snow melts, but it's still really cold, that's the best time to go looking for them, right? Because they're bright white.
I think so.
So I guess, yeah, let's tap into the deer a little bit, because you're also here to talk about some issues with the human-dog-deer interactions. So what's going on? Tell me, like, what the life cycle of a deer is, like, throughout the calendar year. What's it like for them in the summer, and how different is that from conditions right now?
Well, in the summertime, they're usually in pretty good shape. They're healthy. We have a pretty robust population on the island. There's ample food available for them in the summertime, so they're usually in pretty good condition. This time of year, as the weather moves in and the snow starts to accumulate, that changes them a little bit. You know, they start to slow their body down, similar to like what a bear does, but not to that extent. They start to reduce their food intake a little bit, but they're still out there searching for food as much as they can get it. They are a little bit more vulnerable this time of year, and particularly as we get later in the year, as they start to burn off some of those energy reserves that they've gathered over the summer.
Right. So they like literally slow down. Like we were talking a little bit earlier about some of the issues, and you mentioned that like dogs can actually catch deer during this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Can they do that in the summer? Is that
some dogs, probably the faster ones, probably can. But no, for the most part, deer are pretty agile, and they can outrun most dogs. However, in the wintertime, when they start to deplete their fat reserves and kind of slow down and start to conserve that energy, can make them more vulnerable. That compounded with, you know, if we start getting deep snow, that really weighs heavily on deer, and it slows them down. So makes them much more vulnerable to getting chased and captured by deer. And if not captured, just ran to exhaustion or
right.
Perhaps causing them to get hypothermic eventually.
Right. And that would cause an issue, because that would be taking them out of the genetic pool for reasons other than, you know, hunting.
Yeah, it would basically lead to a slow death, probably.
Right. So I guess my question is, this is less of a concern during the summer, or is it just universally a concern and now they're just a bit slower and the impacts can be more severe?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, deer during the summer are usually in top physical condition. You know, they have ample food resources available for them. They have plenty fat on them. They're quite fast and agile. And, you know, that kind of switches when it comes to winter. You know, food sources are pretty scarce. Those animals that are up in the high country are dealing with the both physiological stress of trying to gather food, as well as trying to deal with the cold weather. So that does make them more vulnerable to capture from deer.
Right. And I guess the deer are already, you know, looking out for traps and ducking people shooting at them with bows and blunderbusses this time of year, correct?
Presumably, yeah. Deer season, for the most part, is over, at least on the road system. You know, we do have a youth hunt that's currently underway, started November 16th, a primitive weapons hunt that's open right now for youth.
Is black powder closed now, or?
It's open for youth hunting.
I see.
Archery and muzzleloader are open for youth only from November 16th to December 31st.
And when's the adult?
That ended November 14th.
I see.
On the road system.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me also a little bit about trapping season.
Trapping season started on Kodiak November 10th. It runs basically through March or April, depending on what species people are interested in trapping. That's another important topic that we should discuss, trapping and particularly how that might impact your animals. You know,
right.
We talked about the importance of keeping your dogs under control in the winter to avoid them chasing deer. You know, that is unhealthy for the deer population for reasons we discussed. It also makes your dogs prone to getting injured potentially from a deer. because they will fight back to a certain extent. But the other reason it's important to keep your animals under control this time of year is because of trapping. There is trapping. Trapping regulations on Kodiak are pretty liberal. People can trap pretty much most anywhere. A lot of people don't realize that. People can trap on the road system. People can trap on a lot of the trails and places that, that people regularly walk, including with their animals. So that makes not keeping your dogs under control or visually
within your line of sight.
Yeah, within your line of sight, that can make it dangerous. You know, these traps, most of them are set so animals don't detect them, and they're also set in a way that you won't see them, and that they're usually set with some sort of attractant, whether that be a scent or whether that be a bait. So those are potentially dangerous for your dog, because it will draw dogs in similar to the target species. And if you don't know where your dog is, it could very potentially, the potential could, it could be in a trap.
Right. Oh, what kind of traps are there, and what kind of species are people trapping for typically here?
There's a few different kinds of traps that people most commonly use on Kodiak. Some of them are leg hold traps, which is exactly that. It holds the animal by the leg. Others are snares that are typically designed to capture an animal around the neck.
And those are for like rabbits, right?
It varies. Fox right. is pretty common used for snares. Other are conibear traps, which are also referred to as kill traps. They're designed to kill an animal instantly when it enters the trap. And obviously all these can be dangerous to your pets, particularly if you're not able to find them and they're caught in a snare or caught in a leg hold trap. The most common species people trap on Kodiak are fox, for sure, and beaver to a certain extent. And then we have other smaller, you know, ermine, for example. But fox is probably the most widely trapped on the island.
Mm-hmm. And people are doing those for furs as opposed to meat.
Yep, correct.
So we were talking about the risks that dogs pose to deer. Why can deer be dangerous to dogs?
Well, they will fight back to a certain extent. You know, deer have hooves, and those hooves are actually pretty darn sharp and pointy, and getting hit by them could certainly cause damage to your dog, if not be lethal.
Right.
And in addition to that, you know, just foraging on dead deer, you know, deer can carry certain things that
right.
Might not be good for your animal. But in general, you know, getting kicked by a deer is not healthy for your dogs. That's probably the main threat.
I'd imagine being kicked by a deer isn't pleasant if you're a person either.
It's not. I've been kicked by quite a few deer. And it's
really?
Not. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Excuse me. Mostly through capture operations, where we capture deer in nets, and then you have to tackle them, and you sometimes end up getting kicked around a little bit.
You are the first person I have ever met, at least who's told me that they've been kicked by a deer.
Unfortunately, in the wildlife profession, it's not that uncommon.
Okay.
If you do deer research.
I guess at least the deer in Kodiak are a little smaller.
That's true.
Have you been kicked by bigger deer than the blacktail?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whitetail and mule deer both, so it's not pleasant. But
wow, like all three North American species of deer have kicked you in the chest. That's awesome. That's awesome. You should get like a challenge coin for that. I certainly think so. So can dogs be? I think I've read this before. Dogs can be shot if they're chasing deer, right?
That is true. In Alaska, there is a state statute that, you know, we don't really like to dwell on that too much because it's right. an unpleasant thought. But there is a state statute that says whenever a dog habitually annoys or bites a deer, any person can lawfully kill that dog when it's at large. In addition to that, there is also a $400 penalty that would go to the landowner, or to the dog owner, if that's observed. So it's kind of an unpleasant thought, but that does happen from time to time, mm-hmm. and it's important for people to be aware of that. So those are a couple of really good reasons, you know, to keep your dogs on a leash in addition to harassing deer. And potentially getting caught in a trap, there is the possibility that your dog could get shot for chasing wildlife.
So, I mean, panning that idea out, you know, for the traps, for the chasing deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking of, for example, of like, I know that there's like a limited amount of trails around the island. For example, like on Abercrombie, you can't have your dog off the leash everywhere, but you can have the dog off the leash at certain points. And there are certainly more trails where that's
sure.
Either completely open or just totally unenforced and people just keep their dogs off the leash. What's your recommendation to that effect? Like, are those places still safe to keep your dog off the leash or?
Yeah, I believe Abercrombie is not open to trapping. I would have to double check to be sure. That's
right.
Managed by the state parks, but I'm fairly confident there's no trapping allowed in Abercrombie State Park. But a lot of areas where people regularly recreate are open to trapping. Most areas where people regularly recreate are open to trapping. For example, down in the Passagashack area, Pyramid, there's a lot of areas around town that people might think, oh, you can't trap there, but in fact, you actually can.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know what? Let's dive right into this, because we actually just got a, we don't really take call-ins here, but I guess if anybody wants to call the local radio station, we can take down your questions. Somebody asked if you could go over regulations on where people can trap, where and how far off trails can people trap?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And I'm not, I don't want to delve into where people can trap and where people can't trap because I'm not super familiar with where that is. Most places people can trap, as I mentioned, like state park lands, I don't know if they allow trapping on state parks. I'm pretty sure they don't. Similar to Coast Guard Base, I'm not sure if they allow trapping out there. They may, but again, I don't want to get into that because I don't want to mislead anybody. I think it's better to just assume that most places you're going to take your animals can be trapped. Because
like trails and...
For sure, yep. And,
okay.
You know, I think it's also important to mention that besides the fact a lot of people... or a lot of areas are available for trapping, you know, by and large, the majority of trappers on Kodiak Island try to do the right thing.
I see.
And they're not trying to set traps in areas that they know where people or dogs regularly recreate. You know, nobody wants, trappers included, nobody wants human conflict. Nobody wants dogs in their trap for a variety of reasons.
Right.
You know, but... That being said, there are a certain number of people who just aren't, you know, it's typically what we've found is it's typically people who are new to trapping. You know, they come to Alaska, they're oftentimes not from here, and they come up to Alaska and they want to experience everything Alaska has to offer, which is fantastic. But they need to do it responsibly. And a lot of people don't realize or don't recognize that a lot of these places are highly traveled by people recreating and their animals. And that's typically where we have the most issues is when a novice trapper, if you will set set traps in an area that they didn't know is highly traveled or weren't aware that it's a highly traveled area. And that's when we have most of the human conflicts. But as far as where and how far off trails can people set traps, there is no regulations. They can set traps directly in the middle of a trail, and that's often what trappers will do because they know that those same trails that people and dogs use are also used by wildlife. You know, they
right.
choose the path of least resistance, and that's where they typically have the higher success rate. So the listeners who are interested in trapping, you know, we really encourage them to get off the road system, get further away from areas where people recreate just to avoid that potential conflict.
But legally they could do it.
But legally they can do it. The trapping regulations in Alaska are pretty darn liberal. And so people can trap and set traps in a lot of areas where people would think, oh, you can't set traps there, but when in fact they often can.
So it's the sort of thing where your likelihood of running into it on a trail isn't necessarily high, but dog owners should probably be vigilant nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, depending on where you go, you know, a lot of people like to take their animals back in the backcountry and off the beaten path, so to speak. But the thing to be aware of is if you don't keep your dog in line of sight, you know, your dog can be 20, 30 yards off the trail and get caught in a trap, and you might walk right by it and never know.
Yeah.
And you know, depending on what kind of trap it is, it could be really, really bad. You know, a leg hold trap, for example, you'd probably hear a dog whining and crying or what have you. A snare that cuts off the oxygen, perhaps not. A conibear trap, they might get killed instantly. So, you know, I don't like to dwell on that stuff because it's not very pleasant to think about, but that's the reality of the situation.
Okay. So I guess to that effect, just to wrap it back around to the question I asked earlier, like say if you're going in places like Abercrombie or you're on like near island and you have the dog off the leash, is that something that you need to be like really concerned about? You should probably have your dog like within your line of sight at all times, or?
I think absolutely. Yep. I think you definitely should, because just for that reason, you know, if your dog goes into the brush and there happens to be a trap there, you might not know it's in a trap.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple things that people can do that might help with this. For example, on my dogs, I have GPS trackers on them. And so those are, you know, kind of a little bit expensive, but I think they're well worth it. I know where my dogs are at any one time, as long as they have their collar on.
Right.
Another thing that works pretty good is putting bells on your dogs, you know, louder bells. So that'll do a couple things. One, if your dog is in a trap, you might be able to hear it. But the other thing that does is if your dogs do start chasing wildlife, you know, that gives the animals kind of a heads up, you know, that the deer or the rabbit or whatever it might be chasing, hopefully will hear that bell coming at them and get a head start, so to speak, if you will. You know, granted, we want to avoid dogs chasing wildlife at all costs, but these are one of the things that can kind of reduce the impact of that if it does occur.
Right. And I suppose, like, the secondary goal is to keep them from chasing the animals. The primary goal is to keep them from injuring them or causing undue harm.
Right.
Okay. Well, I hope that answers the question for the listener. I think we got into a pretty good degree of detail there. Now, you mentioned, you know, you got to keep your dogs and your deer close. I think that was a bit of a slip there, but I did want to ask you a little bit about people feeding and sometimes even domesticating deer. What's going on there?
Yeah, so deer, you know, well, starting off, you know, it is illegal to feed deer in Alaska, and it's legal to feed wildlife. There is I think it's $100 fine right now if you get caught feeding deer. But in addition to just the financial impact that might have on you, it also negatively impacts deer. Deer are, like many ungulates, deer are ruminants, right? So they have microflora in their stomachs that helps break down typically plant cell walls.
Right.
And when people, and they're those microflora in their guts are typically adapted to the deer's diet, natural diet that it eats in that particular landscape. What happens when people start feeding deer is they typically use things that are unnatural, like corn or alfalfa or things like that.
So what Pringles.
Pringles, I guess. I guess that could be one. And it takes this microflora, usually multiple weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, to switch to start processing these non-natural foods. And that can impact deer negatively, right. You know, and not only temporarily altering that microflora, what happens when you all of a sudden stop feeding them? You know, then they have to switch back, and it's really impactful on their system. It can lead to bloat, diarrhea, etc.
I had to I had to go vegan for a little while, like for health reasons. Mm-hmm. And you know, I say a little while, it was a few months, right? And I remember like transitioning back to like eating meat again. You get sicker than a dog.
Yeah.
It's really not pleasant. And of course what it is that it's your microbiome readjusting to breaking down foodstuffs that you are totally alien to your system, even after only a few months of being off it.
Exactly. And the same thing occurs in deer, you know, and that combined with already nutritional and physiological stress that's going on in the wintertime can just compounds the issues.
Do people ever just straight up abduct deer? Like they just keep them as pets? Or?
Most common in the springtime, you know, when fawns are out on the landscape, you know, a lot of people think that they're doing good and oh, this deer, this fawn was abandoned, you know, so we need to take it and feed it and take care of it. And that's most often in the springtime. But as I think a lot of people know, that's usually not the case. You know, usually deer aren't abandoned. Usually the females will go off to forage or something else. So yeah, that most commonly occurs in the spring, not only with deer, but moose and other animals in other areas of the state.
That's remarkable. I do, you know, it's interesting to think that, like, I remember I went over to, it would have been Orcas Island, which is part of the San Juan Islands in the Washington State area. Mm-hmm. And all, like, you can't hunt deer there. You can't, you can't trap. There's pretty much like, I don't even know if, like, I think they have really strong regulations on like what you can do with dogs. I think you might have to have the dog leashed up almost everywhere. Hmm. And so the deer are just like unbelievably friendly to people. I mean, I went to like summer camp there and you can be just like standing on a trail. You might be listening to somebody talk and you'll turn around. They're like deer just like licking you.
Yeah.
And they've snuck up on you just to hang out.
Yeah, that's usually a sign that somebody's been feeding them.
Is that what it is?
Typically. I mean, maybe not always, but that's most commonly the issue there. You know, when they get habituated to people, that's usually why.
That is, yeah. maybe that explains it. The deer just looking for handouts.
Yep.
Oh, man. That's kind of funny. So, you know, we've definitely gone into a little bit of some of these details that you wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you think that we're missing to get that story out there?
You know, I think that covers most of it. You know, another thing just to think about when people think that they need to be feeding deer for the winter time, you know, in addition to the impacts that has physiologically on the deer, there's with regard to microflora in their rumen, is the potential for disease transmission. Mm. You know, particularly with diseases like chronic wasting disease and tuberculosis, which we don't have fortunately on Kodiak, but what these feeding sites, if you will, do is bring deer, congregate them in one location as opposed to the natural landscape when the food resources are more spread out. When you bring deer to a feeding site in your yard or elsewhere, what that does is congregates deer under a non-natural food source. And that just makes disease transmission that much more possible and likely. Yeah, and we've seen this in other areas of the U.S., particularly like the Great Lakes region, Michigan, Wisconsin area, where baiting for deer is allowed. If you look at what's occurring in those populations with the deer, it's widespread tuberculosis, serious issues with chronic wasting disease, and a lot of this is because of bringing deer to these to congregate on non-natural food sources.
Is that similarly an issue with bears?
Yeah, but they don't have near to the extent some of the diseases that deer have, like that are very transmittable, like tuberculosis or chronic wasting disease. You know, these can be transmitted. You know, if a deer sneezes on a bait pile and has tuberculosis and another deer comes in, there's a very good likelihood that that deer will pick that up.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, luckily we don't have those issues here on Kodiak, and hopefully we never will, but
we don't have those in Alaska broadly either, do we really?
No.
Why not, if I may ask?
Well, fortunately, for example, chronic wasting disease hasn't made it this far yet. It has been found in parts of Canada and in a lot of places in the lower 48. Just hasn't, to our knowledge, hasn't made it to Alaska yet.
Is that the sort of thing where it's just like just going to keep spreading generation of generation?
Well, there's a good possibility that it's time will tell.
Is there much solution? Like, can we vaccinate the deer or no?
No. That's chronic wasting disease is kind of a nightmare scenario. It's very difficult to get rid of. It's highly contagious and lethal.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was really under the impression that we had like another 15 minutes to go, but this has been almost a whole half hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're down to our last minute here. Anything else you want to plug before we sign off?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. You know, keep your deer under control and your dogs. No, but I think, you know, by and large, on the most part, Kodiak residents are fantastic. You know, they do a great job of all these things, but it's always good to provide reminders and remind those folks who might be new to Kodiak that these are some of the things that they need to be aware of. So thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. This has been another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I was your host today, Dylan Samard, and joining me was Nate Sabota of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.